Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is February 20th, 2014. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Two upcoming events I want to let you know about, both in California. On May 3rd, that's a Saturday, we'll be having lunch with Catherine in Palm Springs. That affair will be joint with Going Organic, Going Organics magazine. Stay tuned to the blog as we have a final venue for you, and you can sign up. June 28th to 29th, the Global Breakthrough Energy team is going to return from Holland, headed to San Francisco to have a conference in San Mateo. That's a Saturday and Sunday, June 28th to 29th. On secret space programs, I'm going to be talking on Sunday about black budgets and the manipulations of global financial markets. For me, it's a wonderful opportunity to get Joseph Farrell, Richard Dolan, and Catherine Alston Fitz together in the same place with many of you and talk about what in the world is really going on. Our theme tonight is out of this world, and that's because our interview with Richard really takes us into topics that are indeed out of this world. It reminds me of the quote from Zoo Story by Edward Albee, where one of the characters sitting on a park bench says, "Sometimes you have to go a long way out of your way to come back the short way correctly." And I feel that way about the UFO topic because it's a topic that involves a great deal of uncertainty, and it's a lot to bring that uncertainty into your world. At the same time, the world starts making a lot more sense if you can create a framework for it and integrate it. So we're going to go out of this world this week on the Salieri Report, but I think it will help you get your world on this world much more grounded. Money and markets. There was so much happening this week, it was very challenging to decide what to put up on the blog or not. So many stories. After a point, they became a blur, and I said, we need to sit back in money and markets and take a look at the greater patterns of what's happening. Two things are happening, and if you haven't read the annual wrap-up, I really encourage you to do so, because it'll give you very important perspective on this. We're entering a new phase. The financial coup is over. The $40+ trillion have been stolen with the bailouts and the Fed quantitative easing. Most of the liabilities have been cleared. There's still cleanup going on. The new money is ready to reinvest. We're on to the next phase. And as a result, both at the upper levels and the sort of middle and lower levels, you have an enormous amount of competition going on. Let's talk about the upper levels first. When I was talking with Farrell in our recent interview, we described what some people call the shadow government as really a metastructure. And we talked a lot about the end of World War II and what happened to the Nazi resources and people, how they merged back into the metastructure and how that was handled. It's a great case study to kind of understand what I refer to as the metastructure, if you want to look at the top of it, Mr. Global. What we're seeing now is a real debate about exactly how that money is going to be reinvested and who's going to manage it. And that debate is going on on the metastructure, and you can see there's real tensions and factionalism. If I had to guess, I would say there's tremendous pushback from the Jesuit networks. Those are the endowments and money that grew up in and around and behind the Vatican, and I think that network is probably asserting their power. What this means is it's a very hard time for the U.S. leadership. What we saw in the State of the Union at the beginning of 2013 is Obama talk about the different trade agreements that were going to come together, including a trade agreement between the U.S. and European Union. He might as well have put a target on his back, because ever since then, there's been nothing but divide and conquer. We saw the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership not get anywhere. By the end of the year, the European Union and the United States, particularly with the Snowden revelations, have been at each other's throats. It got worse. I finally put up a little blog post commentary this week, because we see Merkel saying, you know, they'll build their own internet. Then you have the State Department the public affairs person being outed for saying F the EU on their cell phone. And then the pushback is one of the German cabinet members gets dished out for child porn. When they start pushing out pedophilia and child porn, that's when you know that the fighting and the infighting is getting really dirty. So you can see the tensions are running high. Then we see, very unexpected, we have Obama and the president down in Mexico for the Three Amigos conference that happens once a year between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. The Mexicans have threatened to renege on their 30-plus year railroad franchises, you know, after only 17 years. You sort of wonder if the drug lords are pushing back. But what you're watching is a real breakdown of the coming together in all these different trade agreements and tremendous, tremendous factionalism. We see a report today of another serious leak at Fukushima. My big question, is this real or just more of the factionalism? Of course, probably the most dangerous hotspot right now is the Russians and the United States and Europe all fighting in the Ukraine. Trade wars are what happens when the cash flows get tight and you're seeing deflation. Clearly, these are all signs of deflation. And we have the IMF in a staff report warning that the emerging market is suffering from the resulting deflation as the capital gets called back to the G7, as I've been saying for quite a while. And are you ready for this? A serious trial balloon now running for Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, to run the European Union. What that tells me is they're looking for a need for some much more serious, competent, and peaceful sort of spirits to run things. But my guess is that's a push from Mr. Global trying to get the bureaucracy to stop fighting and get something done. But there's tension all the way at the very top about how this money is going to be reinvested and who's going to do what. And I think that speaks to the power and the importance of this next phase that's upon us. At the lower levels, it's a different picture. What you have, and it's very much like a campaign, when you're part of a presidential campaign in the United States, what happens is no one is allowed to talk about who's going to get what job after the election is over. And the reason is you need everybody to focus on winning and not focusing on the fact that there's only one job for every 10 or 20 people. But what happens when you win the election is immediately then everybody starts fighting and trying to kill each other because, in fact, there are 10 or 20 people for every position. There are not enough positions. You know, and what you discover is 100 people think they're going to be Secretary of State and 100 people think they're going to be Secretary of the Treasury. And, of course, there's war while that gets sorted out. I liken what we're watching to a little bit like a campaign. As I've said for a long time, there's enormous excess capacity in the banking industry. You still have a cleanup of the legal liabilities with the enforcement folks going after the various banks and institutions. And while that's happening, you have a lot of people who get cut out and get scared and get angry. You know, you generally have a mess. It's not surprising. We've seen just article after article about various bankers dying in what is attributed to suicide, but is clearly not. It looks to me like there's a fair amount of assassinations going on. Many people writing about this think this is very new. This is not very new. It's been common for a long time. What is new about this is you see younger people and you see things done with a lot less subtlety than has traditionally been the case. And so they're clearly... and it's almost mob style hits. And I think part of what's happening, it's a combination of things, but you have younger people who are getting appalled or scared by what they see. They're talking too much to family and friends. The higher ups are terrified of another Snowden kind of situation happening. And the next thing you have people getting scared and people getting killed. The higher ups are not just afraid of what they might say, but the fact that they might be used by some of the other factions at a time when things are so sensitive and consolidating. So it shows that things are fluid and that that things are bad, but don't assume that it means the financial system is more rocky than it is, and I'll get to that in a second. What's really important to me, if you're listening and you do work for a big financial institution, it's very important to understand that if you take somebody's money, you need to be discreet and loyal and fully committed to making them money beyond what you take, and not creating risk for them. If there's something going on that you don't like or you don't want to be a part of, then you need to quit and go be part of something that you do want to be a part of. But don't take somebody's money and then think you can create risk for them or leak confidential information, because in the real rules, I don't mean the rules of the courts and, you know, the official reality, but in the real rules, if you do that, you cross the line. So please, until the next phase is sorted out, we're going to see enormous insecurity, both in the middle and the top. And so we all need to be very, very careful. An example of this kind of insecurity we're watching in primary politics before the primary politics begin. We see New Jersey Governor Chris Christie literally sidelined by criminal investigation over something that is foolish at best. And now it appears that Scott Walker in Wisconsin may have similar trouble. If I had to guess, I would say that the Bushes and the Clintons have gotten together and decided to knock off all of Jeb's primary contenders. The Bushes and Clintons tend to be extremely cordial, and between the two of them, their relationships in the enforcement lines and the Department of Justice are quite extraordinary, and there's a lot of cooperation behind the scenes there. If Hillary wants to run for president in 2016, this can serve her well. If they keep it down to just themselves, it's all a very bad sign. First of all, Mr. Global has always permitted a certain amount of honest competition between the kind of people who would be acceptable to him. So I'm not saying it's not controlled or managed, but there is some real competition going on. Mr. Global right now is way preoccupied with more important decisions in the sort of first phase of the post-financial coup. So it appears to me that, you know, he's preoccupied, and so he'll leave it to the, you know, to the political mites to squabble about themselves. If that's really the case, we could come into the 2016 elections with, you know, a series of candidates who have absolutely no credibility and have been through no competition. It's not a very good sign. It will be very bad for the U.S. if that's what happens. Part of what all of the squabbling signals is slower growth. You have just tremendous amounts of fighting over turf as, you know, people are getting re-engineered. What it doesn't mean, as I said, is it doesn't mean that there's going to be a collapse of the stock market, a collapse of the dollar, or a collapse of the U.S. Treasury. It's funny, I was talking with Dr. Farrell about this the other day, and he said, what is happening with the bankers getting killed and all this factionalism is really, really big. Yes, it is really, really big, but what it's going to decide is who controls the mechanisms. There is some small chance that the fighting gets seriously out of hand, and then we end up with wars. But it is unlikely. We're fighting over who controls the mechanism, not about the integrity of the mechanisms themselves. The metastructure is now very resource-rich. You know, Mr. Global has pulled off an incredible thing. My guess is that when the dust settles, those in control will be some of the old WASPs, plus a much more international hand on the lever. So the American infrastructure is going to be even run less by Americans than it is now. The reality of that is that this kind of fighting and whatever comes out of it is going to be bad for the broader population. Ultimately, the way these fights tend to get resolved is that the various groups in power agree to solve their disagreements by stealing more from everyone else. Key stories, as I said, there are many stories, so I do want to go through these with you. Cover story on Forbes this week is the $15 trillion gold rush is their title. We're now up to 1.8 billion people on smartphones, tablets, and desktops. That means the fight for the internet and mobile phone payment platform is going into unbelievably high gear. Expect this to be a very dynamic, fluid thing that's going to be going on. Jumping into the fray is the FCC. As a result of the net neutrality litigation, they've jumped back in with new internet rules. So the battle between the administration and the courts is going to continue, of course, with Netflix right in the middle. Facebook buys WhatsApp, and the companies, essentially the message there is the companies that bring the intelligence agencies in through their dark fibers are going to continue to make significant acquisitions. That's going to cut into the IPO market, which is too bad, and it's going to keep things a lot more consolidated than we'd like them to be. Drought and weird weather. You look at what's happening in Brazil. 142 cities in Brazil are now rationing water as the drought goes critical, and then California. So we see the price of corn and other key agricultural commodities moving up this week. This is pretty scary. I wonder to what extent weather warfare is trying to buy up and take control of the food business, as some of Michael Murphy's DVDs have contemplated. There's something up. We see all the bad statistics on the economy attributed to the weather. Weather is of course, the big excuse. I did a lot of commentary this week. Let me just touch on some of them. One was called the dynamic relationship between bits and atoms. We are watching an explosion in the retail business, and it's worth paying a little bit of attention to. So I would encourage you to read that commentary. The what you're seeing, it was inspired by an article about a Moscow website, which is now sending their sales personnel out. They'll bring you the article of clothing you want to try on, advise you on fashion, and take the payment. If you decide you want it, you get 15 minutes to try it on. And I began to posit about all the different ways that we're going to see both online and in the real world start to integrate and dovetail. And it has very dramatic impact for shopping malls and retail space. So if you're an investor in REITs that do a lot of retail, you might want to think about it. There's a good article from Safe Haven, which is pretty negative on the future of retail. But take a look at it, because it's a very dynamic area. And along with the payment systems, it's going to be very much fluid and tremendous competition this year. We have another commentary. Ray Dalio, a hedge fund manager, did a video on the economy, and I wanted to comment on it. This is part of a whole series of publications, essays, commentaries, editorials by members of the 1% wealthiest of the economy, defending their position and trying to argue about the politics of it. And what's frightening about many of their videos, articles, essays, is the tremendous naivete, and you almost don't know whether either they don't understand the economy or they think that we don't. It's really interesting to contemplate, but I talk a little bit about the extraordinary naivete demonstrated in that. Take a look. There's another one called Predatory Violence at a State University. I had two subscribers who were emailing back and forth about the explosion of the predatory violence by some of the athletes at the university. It's worth reading, particularly if you have kids or grandkids headed to college. You want to think a little bit more carefully about safety issues than you used to. Another commentary is Dick Cheney double dipping. That was inspired by my watching The World According to Dick Cheney, a new movie on Showtime. It's right now it's on cable. And of course, we have the new Netflix second season of House of Cards, which draws a lot of material from Dick Cheney's history. If you look at what's happening, as I describe in the commentary, Dick Cheney's made a lot of enemies, and it almost looks before a Bush election like all the dirt on the Republican side is being collected up and blamed on Dick Cheney. It's almost a whitewashing of everybody else. Very interesting. I think it's unfolding, so I'm not sure if the people who are pushing it know ultimately where this is going to go. Let's see if it catches on. I have big questions about Dick Cheney. The biggest one is to what extent he was using offshore vehicles to invest in a lot of the things that Halliburton or his government positions influenced. Neat website called Experiment. It's crowdfunding science and engineering. And my latest crowdfunding donation is up on the blog as well. So that's it for commentaries. There were a few more as well this week. I don't know. I found a lot to comment on that's going on. Be warned, a new story on Capital One, the credit card company, is now putting in their terms and conditions that they can show up at your home and workplace to try and collect and talk to you about your credit cards. Kind of makes you wonder what in the world is going on that they would need to do that. It's pretty scary. Financial markets, the U.S. equity markets gained back some of what they dropped in January. Precious metals, again, look like they're going to continue to move up. They're up a little bit more than $120. Gold's up a little bit more than $120 from its low in December. My guess is this is just an interim run, but we'll have to see. Our hero this week is Richard Dolan. Richard is a person who was going to be a serious academic and wanted to be a history professor and ended up becoming so interested in what was really going on in this world, and then that led him into the black budget and the UFO story, that he has really dedicated his life to figuring out what's really going on and using a very formidable intellect to sort through all of the evidence to kind of figure out what we can say about this. And he has repackaged it, rewritten it in his latest book, UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. I will say that on several occasions, I've made a serious effort at trying to understand and frame this whole topic, and I've never been able to do it. One is it's a extremely time-consuming task. It's not surprising that it took Richard decades of really dedicating his life to doing it to sort it through. So this is something to do it properly. It takes an enormous amount of time. The other thing is you have to deal with an enormous amount of stuff where you can't get enough reliable evidence to either make sense of it or try and make an educated guess about what's true or not. So you have to be able to manage enormous amounts of uncertainty. And the problem with that is you have an incredible infrastructure of people in the black budget who make it their business to cause trouble and create disinformation. So not only do you have to sort out a lot of weird stuff, but you have to do it when there's some very smart people trying to fill you up with disinformation. And it's very frustrating. Each time I go in there, I just get disgusted and walk away. So it takes real fearlessness to not do that. And I think Richard, of anybody I know, has managed to stay grounded, stay intelligent, stay calm, and really sort out what can be sorted out. And he has distilled this into this new book. This is an intellectual feat of enormous and heroic, just enormous and heroic consequences. And so I recommend it to you, because if you're only going to read one book on this topic that is highly coherent and will help you become more coherent in your worldview, this is it. Ask Catherine. First question. For a couple of years, there have been hundreds of bankers just eager to retire and spend more time with families. Now they seem to be disappearing or winding up in a suicide. Do you have any comments on this? Yeah, I just made those comments, but I would say this. I think people have been disappearing, getting killed, and being dealt with for years. It was just much more quiet and subtly done. This latest round is pretty mob style, and that is new and unusual, although the internet helps us see it and connect the dots. Next question. Hi, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber and like a kid in a candy store, excited about diving in. I just listened to Winter Wellness and Detox from the Archives. Loved it. My question is, have you or any of your guests touched on the topic of hyperoxygen therapy, such as food-grade hydrogen peroxide, ozone, and he has some others? This supposedly maximizes cellular function and even combats pathogenic infections and cancer. If not, can you please investigate the soundness of the science behind such claims? I would love to hear from a credible expert or three. Thanks. Love what you do. I have looked into those on several occasions. I've never done them myself. And I'm sort of loath to talk about anything I haven't tried personally, but I've never been able to find any sources. So if there are any subscribers who are listening, I would encourage you to send any ideas, websites, practitioners, thoughts you have. Catherine, my research is indicating that powers that be actually encouraged the Holocaust from behind the scenes, knowing that it would lead to the establishment of the State of Israel after the war, granting a firm military and political stronghold to the Western powers right in the middle of the world's richest petroleum reserves. What's your opinion on this? Clearly, the Nazis were doing what they were doing with the support of the what I described as the metastructure, but exactly, you know, what the details of that were, I really just do not have an opinion. One of the things that group has always grappled with is population management and sort of social engineering and depopulation. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of the Holocaust was simply prototyping different techniques in that area. Then we got a series of questions from Richard that came in after we recorded the interview. So I'm going to send those to him and see if I can get those answered. Another person asking me what I thought of an IMF document, which I'm going to take a look at, but haven't yet. Someone asked me to comment on the geoengineering video that we posted. Not much to comment on that. I keep posting those. I think geoengineering is going on. I think it's unbelievably important to get to the bottom of it. And of course, we have great interviews with Clifford Cornicombe that I would encourage you to listen to. If you're interested, I'm putting another geoengineering interview up in Wildcards that went up today. A couple of different comments from subscribers on all of the different stories in the United States about actions by law enforcement or the military to get ready for civil disturbance. I think a lot of these stories, as they are presented, are overblown. I would say that we have tremendous resources going into the enforcement area, and it's always nerve-wracking when you have that many people with enforcement powers and the power to do seizures and the need to cover their budgets with fees and other enforcement actions and sort of nothing to do. You know, you just have too many people with guns looking for somebody to arrest. So the Sheriff of Nottingham problem, as I've always said, is real, but I do find a lot of it over-exaggerated, other than, that, of course, the technology allows a level of invasiveness, which is scary. Another question, do you know about Dr. Zachariah Sitchkin? Cliff High doesn't like a lot of his work, to say the least. Since your next guest will speak on UFOs, I was wondering if you have crossed paths. Do either of you have an opinion on his research? I've tried reading his books at various times, and I don't have an opinion and haven't found his work to be anywhere near as useful as somebody like Richard's. I need something which is much more sort of grounded and a lot more evidence behind it. Interesting way that the powers that be have figured out how to deal with a pedophile issue in the UK around Jimmy Savile. They basically went after two guys that they weren't bothered about inconveniencing who they knew would end up being found innocent. So two guys in a row found innocent within a few days of each other has discouraged and disparaged the investigation and in turn taken the air out of it. Like you said, lots of recipes. Oh, yes. You know we are looking at unbelievably serious factionalism when the dirt starts dishing out about pedophilia, because there is very significant liabilities. And that's one of those topics that the statute of limitations can be up, but the court of popular opinion is pretty ruthless about it. So whenever you see the pedophilia allegations or child porn accusations fly, you know that it's getting very, very bitter. One last question, much more hopeful view than some of what we've been getting from Farrell. This is in reference to the wrap-up. In some ways, no mention of the possibilities of the Nazi presence, for what that matters, of that metastructure's active pursuit of additional wealth and power through collateralization of space. But I really enjoyed the wealth of visual content and the explanation of much I had no idea about, even after having read the first two books on UFOs in the security state. Oh, and sorry, this is also a reference to Richard Dolan's book. And let's go to the movies this week. I wanted to offer up what I thought were some of the best documentaries on the UFO issue. One, the one we recommended is The Day Before Disclosure, and then, of course, two very famous ones, Out of the Blue and I Knew What I Saw. The combination of these three documents give you tremendous amounts of footage and testimony and pictures that really helps you understand why this is a topic that shouldn't be avoided. And why avoiding the topic only leads you into greater states of incoherence. Why, if you go at this topic with the quality of material that Richard Dolan offers or these three documentaries, it will move you to much higher states of coherence. The other documentary that I recommend strongly is one we've already had in Let's Go to the Movies, and that's the Phoenix Lights documentary. If you haven't watched that, I really strongly recommend it. It's one Richard and I talk about in the interview. The interview is up on the blog, and tomorrow we'll be putting up as well a video to go with the audio if you want to watch it in video form. As I said, this is a very easy to read book and a really excellent one. UFOs for the 21st Century Mind, A Fresh Guide to an Ancient Mystery. It walks you through all aspects of this phenomena and how it dovetails with our world. And I've said several times, if you have friends who don't want to touch anything outside of the mainstream, this is finally the book on UFOs you can give to them. So interviews up on the blog. I hope you enjoy it. This is the product of many decades of distillation by an extraordinary person with an incredible and very powerful intellect. Okay, that's it for today, February 20th, 2014. Coming up, in response to your requests, I'm going to be doing a two-part series on the breakaway economy. Part one runs next week. Then the following week, we're going to interview Don Cox, my favorite person in the country to listen to on commodities. We're going to be talking about the Fed taper and the commodities markets. And then March 6th, we'll do part two of the breakaway economy. So until February 27th, the breakaway economy, part one, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.